We're back with one of our most wild and controversial guests and his dad in only the second interview ever with the father and son of Hartley Cars. This is our highest production content we have ever done. We took a fleet of people down, a fleet of cars, a fleet of videographers. We even took a drone. You are going to love the visual effects. So I grill Carl and Tom on who's the best car salesman. We poke and prod for them to reveal the best and worst cars that they've ever sold. They both reveal secrets they've never told and stories they've never shared, often about driving too young in their early deals as supercar dealers. There's a lot of speeding involved. There's a lot of crashes involved. There's some deals and negotiations done live on the episode. And there's an absolute disdain for certain types of cars and car manufacturers. This episode has it all.
Who's the better car salesman out of you both?
Him.
That was easy.
Well, of course, it's just the correct answer. He is. He's the OG of the car business. I'm still learning.
I got called the Godfather the other day. I thought one name had been called Doyent, Supercar King, Godfather. I thought myself.
You like that one?
I don't know if it was good or bad.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I had a conversation with Carl the other day about who's around now when I was a teenager in the car business. And, you know, there's no names I can speak to now who still got up in the morning working like I work in the business. They've all gone.
Yeah.
There's so many. I call them Johnny Come Latelys arriving in the business. And I've seen them all come and go, as I said to you earlier. But the desire for me is still as strong as it ever has been. Mm. I love doing what I do. And whilst Carl says that, I'd probably contradict him because his personality is very more flexible than mine. Some people can either, I can frighten the shit out of some people because I'm so direct and it's like it's too much for them. Mm. And some people can actually, excuse my French, but have an orgasm because it's exactly what they want to hear.
Yeah.
So it's with him, it's a bit more, you know, he's such a personality, he's got more of a mixture of different people's personalities and cultures. For me, I'm very blunt.
Mm. And have you, Carl, brought a different type of customer and buyer in to the family?
Like he said, it's all about personalities. I can adapt. He can adapt to any situation to talking to anybody with any personality. The difference between me and him is he doesn't care to adapt too much. He doesn't really care. You know, where I do. Because maybe different circumstances in life and different circumstances on the day where
is
I think
it an
you
age
know
thing,
I think it's
think?
An age yeah. thing. I think yeah. he definitely could when he was my age, you know, probably even more so. But now he's like, you know what, fuck this.
That's how it is, and you know, some people love it, and some people hate it.
Yeah, but you're not going to change.
Not really, no.
No,
I am what I am. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I see what I think, and if they don't like it, it's too bad. Mm.
Where I think that I probably don't deserve that attitude at 37 years old, even though I've been in this business all my life.
Which is like 25 years you've
yeah,
been.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
exactly.
A quarter of 100 years.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think I deserve to have that attitude because I have maybe probably not quite earned that level yet like he has.
Yeah.
You know, like I say, he could be as blunt as he wants to anybody in any position, and they still very much respect what he says and go, well, you know, well, that's that, you know? So, yeah.
I think it's just, you know, it's my the Scotch person and the jocks, I call them. And look at Alex Ferguson when he does an interview. Look at Kenny Dalglish when they do interviews. Mm. They look about the most boring bastards in the world, and they're both great personalities
yeah.
of television, of interview. I mean, they're so sharp. I mean, but the great personalities. Scottish people are very blunt like that. But in business, for me, Carl's maybe right in saying that. When you get a bit older, you definitely get wiser. That's a fact.
Yeah.
And you understand things, you see things you've never seen the way you see them now. And in the car business, I've seen it all.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen everything yet, but I've seen more than a lot of people.
51 years, isn't it?
Yeah, 51 years. And all the honours that can be achieved from it, which is very special. In fact, honours that nobody else has ever achieved in the car business, which makes it even more special. And that's quite a statement to make. Nobody can contradict it. And more importantly, nobody can take that away from me.
Mm.
If they all come with their honours after me, I was the first one to get them.
Mm.
So that's how much dedication, sacrifice, focus has gone into this business, and it's my life.
So, Carl, one of the reasons people love our content together, because this must be like the third or fourth time, I'm actually thinking of just moving into that.
Why not?
We actually think about giving you Hartley as a middle name.
Please, I'll take it. Yeah. You do speak your mind, though. I mean, you've slammed McLaren, you've at times slammed Bugatti. You're not like the car salesman who just wants to tell us everything good and be all sales.
Well, because he might get sacked.
Who might get sacked?
That car salesman who wants to tell you everything good.
Get sacked by who?
By whoever's employing him.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. You say stuff that other people can't say.
Exactly. But I tell you the truth.
Yeah, and why is that?
Because the truth is
because you can't get sacked from your own business.
And the truth shall set you free.
but that's what you didn't pick up on, excuse me, but at the same time, in a different way, all the articles that you've seen in that office, the 51-year heritage, was speaking to motoring correspondents, the biggest in the world, who needed information on car values that the dealer network couldn't give them because they wouldn't give them whether it's a big depreciation price or a fantastic premium price. And so they were all historical articles on new model cars with the best writers in the world. But now, because the technology the way it is, it comes through internet and through podcasts.
But also, I get what you're saying. We're not governed by anybody.
Because I said, aren't McLaren phoning you up going, stop talking about that?
They should make some of their models, they should make better. Yeah. Stop talking about it.
I think the thing about McLaren as a car, I think every car's a bad car occasionally, but they're a great supercar.
It's just that we were talking about the certain models, the lower models,
the
540 and the 570,
yeah.
how problem prone they are.
Yeah, I think they're getting better, aren't they?
But you don't take them, do you?
We don't take 540s, 570s.
But I think they're getting better than there was.
Well, they have to. It's 2024. Mm. They have to. They have to get better.
And now there's things like this and people like you with a big profile. I mean, surely car brands could be
to be fair, which I know Carl's aware of it, they're recently in conversations because they know we sell a lot of McLarens.
And we
sell more McLarens than any used supercar dealership.
And recently,
just to let that know, they do sell more than anybody. Yeah.
But you sell the 675s.
675, the P1s, the 720s, they're good models.
Yeah. And just for the record, factual, and this is not me blowing wind out of our ass, McLarens in an email referred to us as their ambassador for second-hand McLarens in the UK.
But Carl says that they're shit.
Well, I say there's certain models. And they are. Mm. And the reason I say that is from experience. We've sold hundreds of these cars.
Yeah.
Hundreds of that model. And they're just, they can, in the past, they've been problem prone.
Yeah.
And until they make them better, and they are making them better, but until they make them better, we won't stock that lower model of the McLaren. The first model of the McLaren is a lot better than those models.
Right.
You know, the 12C.
I mean, the 720S McLaren, I used one the other day and I think, they're a fantastic car. Mm. And the P1s, we've had this conversation a million times before. LaFerrari, Porsche and P1, the technology of McLaren is very special.
So would you pick the P1 over the LaFerrari?
I personally wouldn't, because I've always said LaFerrari is my personal favourite supercar.
But at a third of the price nearly.
Yeah.
Then I would, yeah.
Yes. So you'd have a P1?
At a third of the price, a third of the price.
So you think it's basically...
I mean, if they're all the same price, I'm having a LaFerrari.
Yeah. But because they're all a similar car, you can get a P1 at a third of the price.
Of course. Yeah, without doubt.
Wow.
Without doubt. Because I feel like it does the same job, possibly better, and there's so much room for growth financially in that car compared to a LaFerrari. Which, buying a LaFerrari or buying an Enzo is kind of like investing in Apple or Google or Disney.
Now.
Yeah.
Not 20 years ago.
So it's established. Yeah. It's safe, but you're not going to get rich overnight by doing so.
No.
Where the P1, it has to reach that level of value.
Is it that price for a reason, though? Is that thing just very difficult to use?
It obviously is that price for a reason. What that reason is, I don't really know.
Because if you
watch every single review on that car from when it was first out and Jeremy Clarkson drove all three, and every single review, that they all say the same thing.
Which is?
P1's the best.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I've just said.
Yeah.
But I am so biased for Ferrari.
Well, they are increasing. I mean, the value. I think they're a great investment. A P1.
Sometimes some cars can just be slightly left behind, and then we have this conversation and on another podcast, and you go, "Hey, remember when we done that podcast? They were 1.3 million, they're now 3.3 million.
Well, definitely,
that's what happens.
I mean, there could be 2 million very quickly.
Really? Wow. Mm.
I mean, quickly, I'm saying if it was 18 months or 2 years.
A couple of years.
Yeah.
2 years could be 2 million.
Right. Well, because you got rid of your Zonda, didn't you?
The Huayra.
Sorry.
Yeah.
The Pagani.
The Pagani.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what you said, Huayra. That's very different, isn't it?
Well, if I had a Zonda, I'd probably have kept it.
Yeah. And so are you... Have you got a hole in a void in your life now? You don't have one of these big cars?
Not really. But if I did, then we'll have to make an exclusive. I can't let too much out. There's nothing at the minute.
Well, surely you have to give me the exclusive.
Of course I will. Yeah, of course. Yeah. But it will be an exclusive.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to let anything out at the minute.
Right. And Tom, do you drive any of the hypercars around?
Only if we're going out on special occasions, or I spend 50% of my time in London.
Yeah.
When I move in London, the showroom moves, so we always have to have cars in certain places in London for our branding, and they have to be seen. It's part of what we do.
Mm.
But it doesn't bother me whether I drive a Volkswagen Golf diesel or I drive a LaFerrari.
Why not?
Because I've done it all, I've driven them all,
and
complacency is a horrible thing. So when I do drive something, it's less valuable. I do appreciate driving a supercar.
And is there any car that still excites you? 51 years in the game?
No.
Not one car?
Not one car, no.
If you had to choose, you'd probably say a LaFerrari.
Yeah, but I'd say that, but it doesn't, you know, it's a car. It just happens to be cars that I buy and sell, as opposed to the passion.
Right, so you don't walk around here and feel the love of the car anymore?
No.
It's just a business?
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel love for the business.
Yeah.
And I feel love for the deal.
Right.
And if I get a bit down on myself, the minute I have a deal, I'm as happy as Larry.
Well, you might not know this car, but Tom, you said to me on the way here, you just sold three cars.
Yeah.
And you seem pretty...
He knows.
We were just talking about it.
Yeah.
It's a deal that's been pending for a couple of days, but he's finally...
Yeah. Right.
It took a bit longer than expected. Yeah.
Well, what?
You know, he's losing his touch over it.
Well, from your office to here, it sounded like...
Yeah, but listen, it's normally a lot quicker than that.
It was within an hour ago.
Yeah. Three cars, one buyer, is it?
Yeah.
Two customers, three cars.
Yeah. And do you have a very separate client list?
We both have our clients who they'll call me on my mobile, they'll call him on his mobile. He might have done business with them for 50 years.
No, I'm dealing with the grandsons now. I don't have the grandfathers, the sons and the grandsons.
Yeah.
So I'm doing three generations.
And have you ever got stepped on each other's toes on a deal?
I don't care if he deals with our customers, it doesn't make any difference to me.
Same with me.
No.
Who cares? Do you care who scores a goal for your team?
No. No. I'd like Nunes to score a few more.
I would.
We paid 80 million for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's one of the Liverpool strikers.
Oh, yeah, I'd love about him.
Andy Carroll or whatever.
Well,
yeah.
And what is the biggest BS in the car industry? You can answer it separately.
I think when dealers with no money put a figure in a seller's head that's unachievable just to get their car on their premises.
And then chip them down and give all the excuses after.
At the end of the day, the car always ends up with us anyway.
You're talking about bullshit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're
right. And that's a thing that...
Because estate agents do that, don't they? Tell you your house is worth £1 million and then you list
and
it.
And it's very hard, even though we're dealing with very intelligent, very successful businessmen, it's very hard if somebody has planted the seed of a figure in your head, it's very hard to accept reality until it's time to accept reality, and then you end up accepting 10% less of the reality that was 2 months ago.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Because they held on to a price.
Because they held
too
on,
long.
They missed the market, and you know, all of a sudden, that dealer who wanted the views on social media to say that they've got a special car, they've got no interest or no intention of selling whatsoever. That guy has funded their stock. He's paid for their content, and they've cost him money.
Right.
Well, but you know, to be honest with you, on the flip side, it's actually not a bad thing for us because all roads lead back here anyway. They end up getting fed up. And saying, look, I'm sick of this shit. I want to sell my car.
Yeah.
So they come to us.
Well, also, right. I mean, what's becoming very public and what's becoming very aware now with these super successful people, and I can name all the brands, maybe Ferrari, Porsche, or whoever, whether it's a form of blackmail when they're making the buyer model.
For years, people have been asking me where I buy my watches. Many of you may know I'm a watch collector, I'm a watch investor, and those as an asset class have done me very well in the last 15 years. I have never shared where I source my watches from or my watch dealer until now. My watch dealer used to be a professional footballer for Manchester United, and he formed a watch brand called Broadwalk. And he sources the higher-end brands like Rolex, Audemars Piguet, Patek Philippe and Richard Mille. I trust him, I've used him for many years, and recently we've done a partnership. Hence, I'm inviting you, if you want to start investing in watches and protect your money from the banks and inflation, to check out Broadwalk. That's Broadwalk. And the website is broadwalkgroup.com. The email is sales@broadwalkgroup.com. And please don't share this, but his number is 07496 878153. Obviously, only message him if you're serious about buying and investing in the higher-end watches. People have been asking me for years, and for the first time ever, you can get access to my watch team.
That they don't really want, but if they don't buy that model, they can't go on the waiting list for that model.
Yes.
I mean, that is, to me, it's the next best thing to blackmail.
Well, so, no, it is completely blackmail.
So if you buy this,
yeah, they make you buy one, but then it's two, but then it's three,
and then we'll put you on the list for.
So I recently done a YouTube video with a client of ours,
yeah,
who's got quite a big channel that has got a good following. Loves his cars. I've dealt with him for 10 years, probably 4 or 5 cars a year.
Yeah,
and he was trying to get a GT3 RS at list price. Although he's not got a great relationship with Porsche, he has with the umbrella dealership who sell Ferrari and Lamborghini and whatever else. He's had loads of cars from them. He wants to get a GT3 RS. And he's like, Carl, it's impossible to get a GT3 RS at this price. So I said, no one gets a GT3 RS at this price. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, Porsche will give you a GT3 RS, but you've got to take 3 Taycan turbos. So essentially, you're paying 170 over list,
yes,
for a car, where we're selling for 100 over list.
But I had this conversation 2 days ago with the customer.
People don't realise that no one gets one at this price.
So that's why you say it's blackmail, because...
Well, I'm saying it's obviously...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, you can have that
never used to
if
be
you
like
buy
that.
That.
Right, yeah.
It never used to be like that.
Also, the Taycan turbos have gone like that.
There's not
they?
A more undesirable car on the market.
What went wrong with them?
They're electric.
But Teslas don't drop the same.
They do.
Do they?
Yeah.
100 grand like in a year.
They don't cost 100 grand. The thing
no, but the Turbo S, when the Taycan Turbo S, what was it all spec'd? 160?
It lost 50% of its value overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's a mixture of a couple of things. That's a mixture of it coming to a point where all these people with these desirable cars that have been forced to take these cars, there has to come to a point where these cars are now for sale. So everyone, okay, there's my 2 Taycans, I've got that. Right, my GT3 RS has come. I'm going to sell my Taycan, put 2 on the market. Well, if you put 2 on the market, and you put 2 on the market, and I put 2 on the market, and so does 150 other people,
yeah.
All of a sudden, there's a lot of cars on the market. And supply and demand, more supply than demand, decreases the value of anything.
Yeah.
So it come to a head where Taycans were actually holding money quite well because people had to hold on to them until they got what they wanted. Now they got what they wanted, get rid of the Taycans and then just watch the arse completely fall out of them.
Right. Are people wising up to this now?
Yeah.
Well, a man said to me the other day, literally, and I mean, it could have been yesterday, I'm buying a Roma off him. He said, Tom, I bought a Roma and it's no secret, second-hand Roma. You give £254,000 for a Roma, it's probably worth £175 today.
To get a Purosangue or something?
No, that was just one. That was just one car he bought. There was another car he bought. He bought another. He said, you know, I've had enough. He says, "Soon they'll just come and give you the extra premium."
Must be good for you guys. Because they all must get pissed off when they come to you.
We hear all the time. People just say, "A few hours old. I'm not playing this game."
A few older story. It is a game
they've had me for 7 or 8 years. I've done 3 or 4 million quid with them. I'm just going to come to you and pay.
And they're still not on that list. They're still not getting that competition.
Yeah, Rolex and brands like that do the same, don't they?
Yeah. Well, this is we know the
Rolex very much like Porsche at the minute. If you walk in, you can get pretty much what you want to an extent.
Not for years could you?
No, but you can now.
Yeah. Because they need you now
all of a sudden.
Being treated like a customer for a change.
Do you know when you walked into Rolex and they were like, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
Sorry, we haven't got time to speak to you.
Yeah.
Now they're like, hi, Mr. Moore, yeah. I remember you walked in 4 years ago and we wouldn't look at you, but any chance you want to come back in and buy a Rolex?
Yeah. What's one thing that you know that other car dealers don't know?
How to adapt through good times and bad times. Anyone could be a good car dealer in booming times. Everyone was a watch dealer 3 years ago. You know, everyone was. Yeah. Everyone can go and order a car. They can make 20, 30,000 over list. They could order another one. That's not hard. Yeah. Anyone can do that. What they can't do is consistently make money and keep customers happy and give them the service we give them in good and bad times.
Yeah.
And flip bad times into good times.
Yeah.
It's called experience. And obviously, I've learned that through him over my life.
Yeah. And so the price drop in the market, you're still trading, it's still good for business. Yeah. Because I guess a lot of car dealers who bought stock had a lot of stock, prices went down a lot, they must have got hurt.
Mm. Well, the advantage that we have over the rest of the field is it's family funded, it's personally funded, it's not borrowed, never has been borrowed.
And so you don't get hit by big interest rate rises?
No, we don't have that. We have our board meetings over a boiled egg at breakfast time.
Yeah.
So that's what we do, over a boiled egg in the morning.
Yeah.
Talk about the marketplace and where the prices are. And that's part of, I'm not mentioning on any, but there was a big PR thing last week. I don't even think I've talked to you about this. A guy larger than life, in the car business, not in this sector, more the run-of-the-mill stuff, supermarket cars. And he's a strong personality. I was only with him a month ago at a conference. Anyway, the board of directors have just fired him from his own company, the company that he founded.
Wow.
I mean, I think I'd be hanging from the ceiling, I'd cut my wrist, if I ever thought such a thing could happen.
Yeah.
We might have to have a chat next.
So what I'm saying is, that's for PLC and private investment goes.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was larger than life, and his presence was larger than life, and yet he was told to fuck off at the office.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you only have to say one thing now, don't you?
Mm.
Yeah, and you're cancelled, and you're out, and you're fired.
This is it's not a secret. It's well publicised last week.
Yeah.
And it was quite a big company. And he founded the business and got private investors in, equity firms, private equity.
Yeah.
And he received a letter and told him that he wasn't welcome to come to the boardroom.
Wow.
To go home.
Yeah.
I mean, how does somebody deal with that?
I don't know.
But you take that risk when you leave yourself vulnerable to that kind of situation. You know, when you bring in private investors and you and they end up owning the majority of the company, that's a risk that you run.
Yeah. Yeah. Giving away power and control.
Of course it is. So, you know, as much as it's a shame, you knew that could happen.
Yeah. Yeah, because people want the money to fuel the growth, but they don't know the downsides.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a bit like saying people want the money, but they don't want the hard work either.
Mm.
That's what I find a lot in life.
Yeah.
In any business.
So 51 years, Tom, what do you know that other car dealers don't?
Well, I wouldn't give them secrets away, but what I do know is I definitely know the car business. And I know what the customer
But the thing
wants.
Is, people can copy what you say, but they can't copy who you are, can
no,
they?
No, and they do that all the time, or they try to. And it upsets me, and he tells me, and my wife tells me it's a compliment.
Yeah.
But it upsets me so much sometimes, and I have to send them letters. We own our trademark names, so we always pay more is a slogan that we have. We own that. The deal maker is a name I own. I own the deal maker. And we also own lots of other quotes. But we see people, I have to have legal letters sent to them and warners not to copy.
Isn't that just the cost of success?
And it's just the cost of success, yeah.
And this is what I tell him. You know, this, look.
Does it not bother you as much?
When somebody who's irrelevant quotes the same quote as somebody who's not irrelevant, it's a completely different thing.
And there's a certain deal right there.
It doesn't. It really doesn't matter.
Because the thing is that if everyone knows you for it and they copy you, it's just free branding for you.
There's what I call a wannabe dealer right there in the London area. And he started using the deal maker. So I politely said to him, you know, please, you know, I own that copyright, don't use that. Anyway, he deleted the post, but he didn't expect me to photograph the post. And he replied to me, Tom, I wouldn't do that. I would never use the deal maker. So I sent them the post. I said, well, why did you put that on there? And I've never got a reply today. You know, so it just identified what he's made of.
Yeah.
Or what they're made of.
And what is, I'll go to you, Tom, first, but I'd like to hear you, Carl, mm-hmm. as well on it. What is the art of making a good deal happen? How do you make a good deal?
You know, I think I said to you earlier, when people arrive to the Hartley estate, they arrive with a feeling of trust. So they arrive to gates where they see homes. This is an established business, this is an established name. The average price car we sell is 250,000 and it goes up to millions. So, you know, you've got to trust somebody when you spend that type of money. You're not buying it from an industrial estate, you're not buying it from a showroom on the main road that can pack up tomorrow and disappear. So I don't call myself a salesman. I think the foundation, the groundwork of getting the reputation and the branding of the name is where it all lies today. It does it itself.
Mm.
So if you look at the product, it's the best out there, good service history, good spec, and more important, a good price. And the most important thing from a brand name, established name, privately owned, that can't be chucked out the boardroom.
Mm. And you, Carl, how do you make a good deal happen?
I think, well, a good deal can be someone selling a car or us selling them a car. And, you know, a deal's a deal. It could be someone exchanging a car that they have for a car that we have. And I think the art of a good deal is making sure everyone walks away satisfied and happy, especially if a customer's spending money. You don't want them to walk away feeling a bit down on themselves or a bit, or, you know, that happened, but I wish it kind of didn't. They're spending money. It's hard enough to earn money. So when they spend it, we want to try and make sure that they enjoy themselves and have a nice experience whilst doing so. And if someone wants to sell a car, we make it as easy as possible. You can pick up the phone, you can get an offer, you can get payment instantly. I mean, how much easier do you want?
Mm.
At the same time, if you buy a car from us and you want us to deliver it to the moon at 4 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday, we can also do that.
That's what's very important, is giving the service that nobody else gives. You know, we do business here at 11 o'clock at night, open the showroom up.
Yeah.
There's more people arriving here by helicopter than do by car.
Right.
So it's quite unique. You sent
us a Rolls Royce to pick us up. So
you need collecting.
Yeah. I have a need right now.
Well, you said you're looking for something that you might want to be driven in. So I'm not going to send you a two-seater car.
No.
You know, it's turned up. You know, I've many a time turned up. I've been here Christmas morning from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. People picking Christmas presents up for the wives or for the daughters or for the husbands.
Mm.
And it's doing what other people don't do that gets you the deals that they don't get.
Yeah.
Bank holidays, I love bank holidays.
Mm.
Bank holidays for me is business.
Yeah.
Being here, open.
Yeah.
For the people we deal with, they've only got that sort of time to come and see us. Most showrooms are closed for bank holidays. I don't know what bank holiday is.
No, me neither.
Mm. You can't send money on a bank holiday. That's the only downfall.
Mm. You can do a deal though, can't you?
You can do a deal.
Yeah.
And credit cards work.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very important to put yourself out in any business when other people, what they call the competitors, won't do.
So, Carl, what's the one thing you'd say above anything else you've learned from your dad?
Like I say, I refer back to it. It's being able to adapt in situations that, you know, I can find myself with the royal family of Saudi Arabia. You said that phone.
Right? You did. She said that phone would go
after
off.
51 years, a few things you get right. Yeah. I promise you. Not a lot of things. Just a few things. Okay.
Gloating there. Yeah, you're so happy. We can cut that in.
No, leave it.
Yeah, we'll cut it in. Yeah, the bit where he said.
Yeah.
Just a few things you're right.
Yeah. So I can find myself like I was, you know, 2 weeks ago in the with the royal family of Saudi Arabia. Sat around having a deal for a car, or I could find myself in anywhere in a completely different situation with a completely different personality under, you know, like when I bought my Bugatti, I was in an underground car park at 3 o'clock in the morning with a herd of Russians who don't speak English, you know, and you've got to adapt to them.
Tell
situations.
Us about that. That sounds like a good story.
That was a great story. That was a great story. I think I've told you that.
Don't remember.
When I bought my Veyron and flew over to Vienna, picked it up.
Tell us.
Oh, so that's a great story.
Go.
So, it might be a long story. You don't mind, do you?
No.
All right, so.
Tom's doing deals, look.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty well, yeah.
he's texting me mum what he wants for tea. Yeah.
The beef sandwiches are great.
So, I was in the market for a Bugatti Veyron a few years ago, and I hunted down a car and I, through connections, got this guy's telephone number for the guy who owned the car. The car was delivered new to the UK, but bought by a guy from Russia. And he was getting divorced and the car was an asset in the settlement that he wanted to dispose of quietly. And long story short, I called the number. The guy didn't speak English. I know he abused me in Russian down the phone, even though I don't speak Russian. Phone down. So being persistent, I kept calling back and calling back and calling back. I thought, if he can just give me 20 seconds on the phone, I can tell him who I am and what I want to do. And one day, his friend, translator, whatever, he called my phone back very sternly. Why are you calling, Mr. Phone? What is it you want? So I told him. All of a sudden, he had a bit of time to listen to me. The next day, he called me back. He said, what is your best and final offer for the car? I am with the owner now. He wants to know what your best and final offer is. So I told him. He said, okay, Mr. We'll see,
Abramovich.
We'll see you this evening in Vienna at the Kempinski Hotel. Goodbye. Phone down. So I'm like, fuck. What time is it? It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm going to get to an airport. I'm going to find a ticket. I've got to find a flight. What's going to happen here? So at the time, I had a 991 Porsche 991 Turbo S. We're talking 2016. I had my passport in my office, which it normally already is anyway, in case I have to catch a flight somewhere urgently. I got in the car and I just headed towards the motorway. On the way, I called my assistant. I said, you need to find me a flight from anywhere in the UK within the next 2 hours going to Vienna. There's a flight at Stansted. Okay, no problem. So, I mean, didn't break one speed law at all. Took my time, got to Stansted, completely abandoned the car at the rapid pick-up and drop-off point with the keys underneath the wheel. Just abandoned the car.
Not the seal done.
Not the seal done.
And got on a plane, obviously telling them what time I'm going to land. I was picked up in a V-Class, a Mercedes V-Class in Vienna. They took me to the Kempinski Hotel. They took me down to see. I thought, I need to make sure this car's real. I haven't seen the car yet. Met the guy who doesn't speak English. I'm in the back of a Viano with four suited Russian security.
Got Did in the you bo- feel a bit under
I was
threat?
Absolutely shitting myself. Yeah. I'm texting my wife like, if you don't hear from me, I'm in Vienna. I've been done in. Like this, as simple as that.
Yeah.
Like I really thought, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
But deal's a deal at the end of the day, isn't it? It's what we do. So ended up, I need to see the car. Gone downstairs, they pulled the cover off the car. Thank God the car exists. It's there. Okay, no problem. So he said, are you happy? I said, yes, I'm happy. He said, okay, let's go upstairs and drink some vodka. Okay, no problem. So upstairs, finished at 2 o'clock in the morning. Woke up in the morning about 8 o'clock. Sent the guy the money and just wanted to get out of Vienna so fast.
Did you take the Bugatti back?
Took the Bugatti. Didn't know where I was going and drove it to Munich to leave an absolute randomer's house that I didn't even know or never met before. But it was a friend of a friend of a friend who lived in Munich. I needed to leave the car somewhere where I organised transport. So I turned up at 8 o'clock at night in the snow. There you go, mate. There's my Veyron. There's the keys. I'll be in touch next week. Can you drop me off at Munich Airport?
Is that the first Bugatti you bought?
No, that was the first one I had personally.
Right, yeah.
But no, we had them from the first week they were launched. Yeah.
Right,
You like Bugattis, do you? They don't do it for me.
No, not really me.
No, they don't do it for me. Never had
no, you think that they're underpriced, don't you?
I think they're special.
Yeah.
And I've seen them for Geneva Motor Show for about 5 years before they were launched, 4 years.
Yeah.
So it was like an old car to me when it came out. And I've never been a fan of Bugatti.
No.
You
think they're underpriced?
I think the Veyron's underpriced. Yes. And I think the only reason it's underpriced is because of the running costs. I think if the running costs would half, the sale price would double.
Would they half, though?
They're should working half. On it.
They should half.
Yeah.
They're working on it.
Right.
Half is still too expensive. Yeah. You know, half isn't...
How much is a tyre on a Bugatti Veyron?
6,000 a corner.
6,000 a tyre?
Yeah,
how much is a wheel?
A set's €52,000, so... And you have to replace the wheels every third set of tyres.
Whether you use it or not.
So, 18 grand worth of tyres, and then you have to do 58 grand worth of wheels. 6 grand each, that's 3, that's 18 grand. And then you have to,
four wheels.
Per corner.
Yeah, there's four corners on a car.
Yeah, thanks.
24,000.
Aren't you supposed to be nice to your customers now?
He wants to sell a Bugatti with 3 wheels. Fuck me, I'll tell you what.
No,
you'd be some
you
salesman.
You couldn't do the math.
it's a bit piss-taking, to be honest with you, I'm sorry.
Wow.
But especially these prices in 2006, by the way. You know, we're in 2024 now, where that's still a lot of money. But in 2006, I mean, you could buy a new car for £6,000 in 2006.
Yeah. Wow. Right, I'll tell you what, let's change things up. We'll do a bit more of a quick fire round, just for the flow and the energy. So,
any music questions? He's good at that.
So if you give the answer and maybe, you know, a couple of sentences of context, and I'll go one then the other. So I'll start with you, Carl. So Carl, the most overrated car in your opinion and why?
So I would say in my experience with previous models, a Koenigsegg is the most overrated car in my opinion. The fact that they cost £2.5-3 million and the ones that we've had have been extremely unreliable. Although the new models, I understand, don't have that problem. So in my experience...
Have Koenigsegg told you to say that?
Yes, they paid me quite heavily to say that. No, I actually, I know a lot of people who have Koenigseggs and they say to me, Carl, you're always slandering Koenigsegg. Get in a new model, drive one, take one, drive one, use it, and then give me your opinion. So I can't talk about their new cars, but the previous models...
But I mean, their new cars are like really expensive. Yeah, they're more than two, aren't they?
Yeah, they're four.
Well, there you go. That's I mean...
So I want to hope there's some improvements.
Yeah. Okay. And Tom, for you, the most overrated car and why?
Bugatti.
And why?
Because I don't think the way supercars are made today, that spending £3 million or £3.5 million is necessary to enjoy speed.
But Bugatti are not the only brand that do that.
Yeah, I know, but overall, we'll just talk about servicing costs. I mean, I think that's a just overrated product, full stop.
Yeah. And Tom, for you, the most underrated supercar and why?
Underrated supercar? That's a difficult question.
Good.
Because all the brands that we sell, they're all rated supercars anyway. Porsche, Ferrari, Lamborghini. Underrated? I don't think I could answer that question.
There isn't a particular car or model that you just think
there, there was a time when, you know, Ferrari and Porsche have always been the leaders for a long time. But now they all do much the same thing. Mm. I mean, as I said to you, McLaren earlier, in the earlier days, the first McLaren that I ever bought, I couldn't open the door. And it was like within the launch of 48 hours, and I was at a petrol station up the road here, it was very embarrassing. And from that time onwards, I never trusted that car because I'm claustrophobic. So the thought of being locked in the car, which has happened, not with me, but with clients and McLarens, but they've got a lot better now.
Yeah.
A lot better.
Mm. And what about you, Carl? The most underrated car and why?
I think the most underrated car is a McLaren. Mm. They have a bad stigma, a bad reputation that their good models, their good cars carry along with them, and it's unnecessary. They are fantastic value for money. A McLaren 720S at 130,000 is absolutely incredible value for money. It's off the charts, insane. When a diesel Range Rover is £130,000, right? And a car that does 210 miles an hour is quicker than an Aventador SV, looks great, the doors go up, it's 130 grand. Costs 350.
What, is that the paradox though? It's such a bargain because it's not well rated.
Yeah, and that's the vicious circle.
Yeah.
Until someone sits in the car, and I go back to my Koenigsegg statement, until someone sits in the car and goes, right, let me look at this with a fresh pair of eyes, not listen to anything that people who don't own these cars have told me, because you only hear a bad reputation from people in their mum's basement on a chat forum. You know, you show me someone who's owned these cars that if they're not talking about the service McLaren gives, not talking about that, talking about the car, they will say a McLaren is the best value for money car on the road.
Wow.
And that goes from a P1 to...
That surprises me that you said that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a big fan of their... I'm not a fan of the brand. I'm a big fan of their cars.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, Carl, what's the hardest car to sell for you?
The car that doesn't show value. It could be anything.
Is there a particular car though? It's just you've always struggled.
If it's
to sell.
The right money, it'll sell.
So any car.
Yeah, any car. If it's the right price, it'll sell.
This is a fact with anything in life.
There's no car you wouldn't take. Other than the cheap McLarens.
Yeah. Just don't want the headache and the profit in them. You know, but you know, at the right money I'd take one and move it on in the trade to somebody.
Right.
And they can deal with the retail customer.
Yeah. And then what's the easiest car for you to sell? If you could have 1,000 of them that you just love them to sell, we'll go with you, Tom.
You know, everything's about price. Whatever it is, it's, you know, I always say there's no photographs on the bank statement.
Mm.
So it doesn't make any difference at the end of the day.
You've got a lot of Rolls Royces in here. You like selling them?
Yeah, Rolls Royce is a big part of the brand. Yeah, Rolls Royce is a big part
Rolls Royce have been a massive part of this business. Before I was born, you would probably sell as many Rolls Royces as anything else.
And I find now more so with how the network works with Rolls Royces, there's no doubt that we sell more second-hand Rolls Royces than any 10 dealers in this country.
Wow, I mean, I've just counted in my head. I'm sure I've seen at least seven.
Oh, there's more than
yeah.
that.
Oh, there's more than yeah, more is than there? That. Yeah, yeah.
That must be more than any. Well, if you got
we've got more Ferraris.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but if you.
But you got a lot more. It seems like you got a lot more models in a Ferrari than you do.
Well, you do. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
The whole beauty of the Hartley estate is you can come here and see all these brands under one roof, as opposed to go to a Ferrari dealer, a Porsche dealer, Mercedes dealer. They're here.
And if you go to Ferrari or Porsche or Mercedes.
Well, they never have any stock either.
what kind of car do you think they will tell you is the best car?
The one they want to sell.
Exactly. And that they're only selling one brand. Where you come here, I don't really care what you buy. You know, do you want a Porsche? Sell you a Porsche. You want a Ferrari, a Lamborghini? I can tell you what does what and what value or what increase or decrease you're most likely to have. But at the end of the day, the decision's yours. And you can come here and you can kick yourself out, your whole family out with a car.
Yeah.
You know, family cars, convertibles, coupes, track cars, whatever you like.
Yeah. Carl, what's the best car investment you've seen or made since you've been here 25 years?
Well, hindsight is a funny thing. We've sold a lot of cars over the years that when you look back on, it was a big mistake selling them.
Yeah.
But we are traders, we're dealers, that's what we do. We straight in, straight out, try and take a profit and move on and go again with something else. The best investment I've personally seen was my Pagani. It was a very risky car to buy. No one really knew the value. I thought I knew the value, but it was only a gut feeling. And at the same time, I was always going to buy it. I just wanted it, and I had a price in mind that I know the guy would accept. And
what did you pay for it?
Less than that. And
what did you sell it for?
Well, it 100% is money.
Really?
Yeah.
So doubled your money on a seven-figure car?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well into seven figures.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what about you, Tom? In 51 years, what car have you seen that's been the best investment or it's gone up the most?
Oh, we've seen...
just going back, we've sold McLaren F1s that have 10 times the price. But obviously that's over a long period of time.
Yeah.
But you've just seen classic Ferraris that might have 100 times the price.
Yeah, so, you know, if you looked at 50s and 60s Ferraris and the price they are today, but even more than, I mean, we've sold Enzos here from 600,000, bought them back for us, 800,000, the same cars.
Yeah.
Sold them for 1 million, they went on to be 2 million, now they're 3 million.
Right.
So, and even the modern supercar era, that's a big growth.
Yeah.
If you compare it to a property price, even a good property in London, you wouldn't have had that growth.
Yeah. And have you've sold McLaren F1s, I guess, before?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
they've just gone like colossal in time even today.
Couldn't you remember the cheapest F1 you sold? What was it for?
Well, the first one we had here was about.
I don't know if you had one when I was younger. I remember the
silver car.
We had one that was
7 million.
No.
We had the silver car that we had here.
Yeah. No, we sold it, Dad. We sold that. We sold it for two. Just over two?
Yeah, that was the first car.
But I think you had
an orange car. We had a GTR orange car as well.
So you sold an F1 for 2 million. What are they now?
No, sorry, excuse me. Yeah, the car today would be 20 million today.
Yeah, 20?
Yeah.
Wow.
And not easy to get for 20 either.
No.
Like if you said, Carl, I'll give you 20 million for one today, can you go and get one? Wouldn't be easy.
No.
No.
Wow. Why have McLaren F1s gone up so much?
I guess another car. I'm not a big fan of that car.
It's hard to see 20 odd million in any car.
But in that car in particular, I don't know why. And Gordon Murray's been here a couple of times, and I got to respect him as a designer.
Yeah.
And recently, when I told you I was inducted into the Motor Hall of Fame, I'm lucky he's part of that. He's part of that group.
Yeah.
And it's an honour to be even associated with such a name.
Yeah.
But I don't get it with that car.
Is it just really low numbers or is it?
Low numbers. The car won Le Mans. It beat Ferrari to win Le Mans, which, you know, can you imagine a car in today's... Can you imagine Pagani making, which they made similar numbers to an F1 in one of their models? I think an F1 was 96 cars.
Yeah.
So Pagani made 100 coupes, for example.
Yeah.
Can you imagine them making a race car that you can drive on the road and it winning Le Mans.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's not ever going to be done again. You know, you can't do that. It's not going to be done again because these Le Mans cars now, they're closer to what Elon Musk sends up to the moon than what they are what Elon Musk puts on the road.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
they're literally rocket ships.
Wow. What's the most amount of cars you've ever done in one deal? Have you bought like a fleet or?
Yeah, we bought. I remember we bought loads of collections of cars, and which you know is that's easier done than selling a large amount of number of cars because someone could have 100 cars and go, you know what? I've thought about it. I want to sell them 20 and keep the other 80 or whatever. So that's easier said than done. I remember a customer, well, not a customer, a fellow trader up north who we had a good relationship, got a good relationship with. He had a bit of a disaster in one of his businesses and he needed to raise some money fast. And I drove up to Bradford and we went for a meal. We sat in his house, we negotiated, and I bought 23 cars from him.
Wow.
In one night. I also remember selling 8 or 9 cars in one sitting to one person.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how do you do big deals like that?
We had a guy come to buy a Jaguar E-Type Series 1 Roadster, and in the end he left with 9 cars, and that was by far the cheapest. F40, F50, Veyron.
That must have been good.
He come to buy a £130,000 Jaguar.
And how much did he spend?
Oh, 4 million? 5 million?
How did that make you feel? Like, be honest.
It was on New Year's Eve as well. So, how did it make me feel? If the deal's a deal, it's good. But you forget about it the next day and you move on.
Yeah, but surely you're allowed to enjoy that a little bit.
I got quite drunk now.
If you do a big deal like that, do you like to phone your dad and tell him?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We both do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I sort of, I might be a miserable bastard, but I just move on. It's like history after you've done the deal.
What, because you've been doing it so long?
Yeah, just.
Is that not sad, though, to lose that excitement?
At that time, it's exciting, but you pass it on very quickly.
It lasts for me for a short period of time.
It's the last deal you've done.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And do you think it's that mentality that makes you successful? Mm. You just move quickly on? Or is it just because you've been selling cars for so long and it's just normal?
Well, it's just like Mario Balotelli once said, why doesn't he celebrate when he scores a goal? Because it's his job. Does the postman...
He didn't do it very well, did he?
But does the postman celebrate when he delivers a letter?
Yeah, but that's not selling 23 supercars in one deal.
That's his job.
But he does like 1,000 letters a day. You do 400 cars a year. It's a bit more of a special thing, isn't it?
It's his job. That's what he's there for.
Right, and that's how you see it.
And that's what we're here for. That's as simple as it is.
Is there not any car that you've sold that's actually made you really feel something, though, that you just wish you hadn't sold it?
Yeah, loads of cars. Loads and loads of cars that I've been kind of emotionally attached to, and I think, oh, you know what? But at the time, you know, I probably didn't have the money to take it out of the business and keep it personally, so it was one of those things. But I remember we had a Pagani Zonda Cinque, 1 of 5 in the world.
Wow.
And that, for me, probably still is my favourite car. And, you know, we sold that for 1.4 million. It's now worth probably 14. And we're not talking long ago, by the way. We're not going back 30 years. We're going back 10 years ago.
Are you not ever tempted to have an arm of your business that just buys some and keeps them?
The problem is...
Because you must know this better than anybody else.
I know, but we're both hindered with this disease that everything is for sale.
Agreed to tell you, I would make a statement. The only thing is not for sale on... And the Hartley estate's my wife.
Okay, so car's for sale then.
Everything else, no, that's his wife. I can't speak for his wife. But I can speak for mine. And the thing is, greed's a horrible thing in business. I've never begrudged anybody making profit on a car that we've sold or regretted a deal that we've done. That's the difference between, again, a businessman's mentality and an entrepreneur's mentality.
So when I bought my Pagani, I had the car 5 days. I didn't have a driving license, so I've never driven it. And a friend come over to see the car. Also, he's a very big customer, but he's a friend. He came over and he said, come on, he said, I'll take you for a drive in your car. Because I've never drove it. And when he got back, I had the car for 5 days. He offered me £500,000 profit. Wow. I'd had the car for 5 days. I'd never driven it. And I turned him down. And he thought I'd gone mentally insane. Like there was something wrong with me. Like I need to go. And you got to go see somebody because there's something wrong with you. And the guy was saying, Tom, just tell him to sell me the car. The car's not for sale. It would have been for sale at a price, obviously, but that price was not the price. It was more than the market price at the time. But for me personally, it wasn't the price. But I sold it for $1 million more 2 years later anyway. Yeah. So. But if I wouldn't have, he'd have said, I fucking told you to sell my car. You know, so yeah.
So you definitely never had a temptation to have like a more of an investment arm to the business?
I do. And I do that with certain cars, as you know, with the Pagani and the Veyron and stuff like that, I do. But I think I have more of a love for cars than what he does. Mm. I actually don't know of anybody that has less of a love for cars than him. Actual cars. Take business away, take profit away, actual cars. What do you think of that car? I don't know, it's a car. that's what he's like.
It's just a thing where, as I say, I've done it for so long, and I'm not attached to them. I'm attached to the profit, and I like doing the business. Mm. And it can be anything, but it just happens to be luxury, performance, and classic cars.
Yeah.
And which started off being a Range Rover when I was 12-year-old.
Do you think that makes you a better deal maker because you're not attached to the emotion of the car?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. But it's also, like I said to you, I'm very fair in business. I always like to leave a margin. And I get very happy and I'm very, very pleased when I see somebody make it. We have to buy a car from a customer and give more money back for it. Mm. That doesn't, you know, I don't hold any grudges from that.
No.
I'm very happy for the customer. Mm. And we're doing that. We do that all the time. Not with every car, but we do it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, customers make a lot of money from us buying cars.
Yeah.
Especially the older cars. And it's pleasing. Mm. And even the guys we sell cars to that lose, you know, a man that buys a supercar today, his average depreciation from modern supercar is likely to be between 25,000 and 50,000.
And that was normal before lockdown, wasn't it?
It also depends on the price of the car. I think you can put a percentage value on it. I don't think you can put an actual.
But they don't. The value. Thing is, the clients that we deal with, be it some of the most powerful businessmen in the world, that's how it is.
Yeah, you shouldn't. That's nothing to.
I had a conversation.
You shouldn't buy a supercar if you can't.
I had a conversation with.
You can buy a Mini.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with a mutual friend of ours 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And we were talking about a mutual friend that's in the watch business and very big in the watch business.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the car market compared to the watch market and how it's changed and what was going on and whatnot. And he's also into his cars. He's a customer of mine, as you know, and I'm a customer of his and I buy watches from him and it all swings and roundabouts. And we were laughing because we were comparing customers that value other things than losing money in a watch or a car. So I've been in beach clubs or nightclubs with some customers who are friends, and I've seen them spend 30, 40,000 pounds in 3 hours. I've watched them do
just
it.
Just on drinks and
just on having a good time and drinks and whatnot. I've seen them do it. I've seen it happen a lot. But if they buy a car for 250,000 and they have it for a year and they lose 50,000, they're fuming. And me and Kieran were laughing about this because I've said, what about when we were in Saint-Tropez 3 weeks ago? Yeah, but that was different. That was a memory.
Do you think it's about the sport of it? Like buying and feeling like you...
I think it's all ego where they don't want to feel like, and it happens to the best of it, happens to us. They don't want to feel like they have made a decision that's cost them money on an investment, if that might be. Mm. But as somebody very famous once said, yesterday's price is not today's price. And that's how it works in this business. Mm. Yesterday's price is not today's price. And that worked the opposite in COVID. But Carl, these cars were 50,000 less 3 months ago. Well, yesterday's price is not today's price. Same thing in times where the market's a bit lower. Mm. Remember when I spoke to you 3 months ago and you offered me XYZ for my car? Is that still available? Yesterday's price is not today's price. Simple.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my business partner, he analyzes everything and he beats everyone I know at minimizing depreciation and he values that. He will never fully admit to me how much time it takes him to do that.
So how much money is it costing him?
This, because he's worth a lot of money. He knows opportunity costs because he says it to me when I'm away doing a podcast for a day and not in the office.
Yeah.
But for me, if you can make a decision, I came here, I bought the Porsche off you.
Yeah.
I just made a decision and I didn't do really any research. I just trusted the relationship we were building. Mm-hmm. So that saved me 45 years of research and all of this.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the experience. We actually made content out of it. That did well. I brought it back to you.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll lose a little bit, but probably would have lost more with my cash sat in the bank. I've had a good experience and there's maybe more deals to be done.
And you picked a box.
Yeah.
The box was, you wanted one.
I wanted one and then my wife didn't want me to have it anymore.
How that came about is you said to me, what I really want is a Porsche 930 Turbo.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I've got
one. I have one upstairs. Exactly. Is that your best line?
It wasn't the fact of, I sold you a car, you came in to do a podcast and I magically sold you a car. You in the back of your mind, you wanted one of them anyway.
Yeah.
And you thought, you know what? If I find the right car that I want to buy and it's in Aberdeen, and I have to take 2 days off and fly there and buy it, and I get it, might get it $5,000 cheaper or whatever, but it's cost me X, Y, Z more to go and do it.
Yeah. And you buy, and you know, I felt like buying it with you, we'd done some content together. If something went wrong, I'd probably be okay.
Yeah. Put it all over social media. Don't buy a car from these guys.
Do you want the good news or the bad news, Rob?
You've sold another car.
No. That Porsche just gone down 50%. That Porsche that you bought. That
no, it has. Carl already gave me a range before I bought it. No.
The market's changed so much in the last 24 hours. Christ. Fucking unbelievable. You wouldn't believe it, would you? Eh?
Right. And
that's
on that.
That's one of my favourite cars, by the way.
It's one of mine, but I don't have enough space for all these cars. My wife's nagging me, get rid of them.
I drove the first turbo 3 litre and I was 15-year-old. Right. 1976. A brown car, I can remember it now, with tan leather.
Yeah.
I blew the turbo off in it.
Yeah. What, because you were driving it hard?
Just because at the time, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
What was the one that you lodged somewhere?
Oh, I've done a few of them.
That was a 3.3 turbo then? That was what Rob's got?
I left a Ferrari Dino with flared arches in 1977 in a field in Yorkshire. It was picked up and scrapped the next day.
And how much are they now?
Car would be 400,000.
Yeah, it'd be more. A chairs and flares car would probably be more.
Blue, powder blue. Wow. I was 16-year-old.
What, and you just drove off the road?
It wasn't my fault, by the way.
Says everyone who crashed their car.
He remembers it completely.
I was coming around the corner, and this is an unbelievable story. There was a guy in the passenger seat. I was coming around the corner, and a car was coming out of the way, cutting my corner, and I swerved to miss him, hit the bank and went airborne.
Wow.
Landed on the roof, spun in. The guy was found 30 yards out of the car.
This is your passenger?
Yeah, 30 yards out the car.
Was he all right?
Not a mark on both of us.
But am I making this up? Was he found 30 yards out the car, still in his seat with his seatbelt on?
I swear to you, I'm telling you. And I've got a friend of mine who picked me up. He had to come and pick us up. And there were no mobile phones in. I had to walk to a house and phone a friend up and say, listen, can you come and pick us up? And then other friends that we had, of course, these are things you should have done, and I wouldn't advise people to do these things. I had no driving license, I had no insurance, okay, I had none of that stuff. The car at the time cost £6,800, the car, when I bought it at the time, just under £7,000. I bought it out of British car auctions in Brickhouse, and drove it, went to Stringfellers, what you call Cinderella's Rockefellers, which was owned by Peter Stringfellow at the time. And on my way back, I didn't drink. I never drank alcohol until I was 21-year-old. So I wasn't drink driving or anything like that, but I had no license, no insurance. And I was driving back to Preston from Leeds, 2 o'clock in the morning. But I've had a couple of others that have been my fault.
Mm.
You know, turbos, I put a couple of turbos up a tree.
I had to chop the tree down.
Yeah.
Get the car out.
Yeah, and I've come out.
He lodged it up a tree.
Yeah, I've come out. Same car as yours.
Come out of everyone.
It was actually that car.
Yeah, that's why it's gone down.
It's gone down 50%. I thought that was the bad news I needed to tell you, but no, I've been very lucky. But you know what? I more so aware now. In fact, I was only thinking about this. It was last night, or the night before, how dangerous and how much respect you've got to give cars today. Because it doesn't have to be your fault. It doesn't have to be your fault.
Yeah,
you can be driving a car and somebody can be coming the wrong way and you're dead. My grandfather was killed in a car.
Oh wow!
And he was killed in the car because he had his seatbelt on. The seatbelt killed him.
Wow.
That's going back into the 60s.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's ups and downs to every accident. But cars, when people drive these cars and they don't, especially, look, that car that you've got, when I look back at the 80s, when you got some people to jump in that car with no experience of power, I mean, they're going to kill themselves anyway. Mm. They're definitely going to smash the car up because they haven't got a clue what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And it's still the same today.
Especially when Ferrari are knocking out 800,000-900,000 brake horsepower cars.
If you've not had any experience driving such cars,
these cars are on the edge. Like my DBS, you can be in seventh doing 40 or 50, and if you put your foot down, you're going to go the wrong way.
And you're dead.
Yeah. And they're just always on the edge.
And you're dead.
Yeah.
And if you're not dead, you're going to kill somebody else.
Yeah.
So it is dangerous. And I shouldn't be saying that we sell supercars, but you've got to respect them.
Yeah.
You've got to respect a car. You've got to respect a supercar. And these we were talking about at the time. I did not respect them. I just didn't realise the power. And trying to do 120 on a bend in a turbo didn't always work. So that's when you run them.
God, and those old cars, because I've got the 87 Testarossa.
Do you know, I'm going to tell you an unbelievable story about how good Mercedes are. And I swear this is the truth of the story. I was caught in What's My Wife Now. I was 18-year-old, driving a brand new 450 SLC Mercedes. We've just sold the same car last week. Similar car.
It's a rare car.
The one in the other showroom.
No. It's a coupe. Anyway, a 1979 450 SLC Mercedes.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was driving from a place called Bingham to Leicester. There's a road called the A46, right? And I was doing 100. I didn't know this until I got stopped. There was a roadblock. I was doing 147 miles an hour in 1979 at a 450 SLC Mercedes. Okay. And when the policeman roadblocked me, genuinely, I seen the thing coming from behind. And my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, and we got roadblocked, and the man said, there's a guy waiting to come to see you. So I said, really? He said, yeah. So anyway, he did pull up, and he was human. He said, you're a fucking lunatic. I said, really? So by the way, I had my window down that much. And he said, I've been following you, he said, for 12 miles. I said, we need to get a faster car. And that came out in the courtroom, didn't it? Anyway, I got banned for driving. But what I'm saying is, in 1979, a 450 SLC Mercedes, I couldn't think of the thought of it now with the technology of the tyres, the engine.
Yeah.
Brakes, how long would that car take to stop?
A week.
147 mile an hour. It was recorded in Melton Mowbray courtroom in 1979. And I said to the corporate, I said, you need to get some faster cars. It didn't go down very well.
Wasn't there a meme going around with you years ago with the Bugatti?
Still goes around now.
Yeah, go on, tell us.
So when I bought the Bugatti and got it back from, when I got picked up from Munich, got it back to the UK. It needed a service. It needed tyres. It needed wheels. So, fuck. The Bugatti had the car for, say, a month or so doing all that. When it was ready, me and my wife went down to London to have the day in London because the Bugatti London was obviously in London. We had the day around there. As I'm driving from North London into sort of Knightsbridge, get into Hyde Park Corner, blue lights, blue lights. But I'm in a traffic jam. What could I possibly be doing? I'm in a traffic jam. Pull over. Oh, God. So pulled off the road. But obviously we're in central London at this point. It's a Veyron that I've done quite a lot of social media stuff on when I started to get into social media. It had my number plate on it, Carl's. So it's a car spotter's dream at this point. So I've pulled over and the same kind of thing, and he wonders where I get it from. The officer said to me, as they do, hello, sir, do you know why we've stopped you? And I said, because I let you. Which, looking back now at 28 in a Veyron, was
cocky
a real prickish thing to say.
But that meme still flies around.
But someone obviously heard it, and because I was surrounded by photographers, someone obviously heard it. And by the way, the moral of the story is they didn't stop me for anything. Like they wanted me to prove I owned the car, which I did. Wanted me to prove I was insured on the car, which I was. They wanted me to prove who I was, which I did. It was completely irrelevant. Mm. One of the car spotters had heard me and then made a meme. Officer, sir, do you know I would've stopped you? Carl, and obviously the number plate on the front of the car says Carl's. Carl, and there's a picture of me sort of arguing with the officer or having a heated discussion. And it said, Carl, because I let you. That went viral. That's still going.
Yeah, it went wild.
It's still going.
How long ago was that?
2016.
Wow.
It's still going. And all sorts of A-listers, like rappers, like music industry, like people off American TV, you know, big people on social media, they've all reposted it at some point. It does the rounds more on Facebook, which I'm not even on Facebook.
Right.
But it does the rounds more on Facebook than what it does anywhere else.
Yeah. And haven't you got a little story to tell about your wife's car? Like right now about your wife's car?
When does this podcast come out?
You'll be fine.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So My wife's got a Bentley Bentayga S.
Had.
Yeah, had. A white car. And last week, a friend of mine who owns restaurants local to the showroom, you know, I go to his restaurants a lot, he called me and he said, me and my brother want to buy my dad a 60th birthday present. Do you have any Bentley Bentaygas? And then before I could answer, his next message was, ideally white. So I'm in the house and I'm like, oh, she's not going to like this. So I said, yeah, really? I can't find none on your web, on your site. I said, no, it's just come in. Sent him a picture. My wife's got her own number plate as well, which has her name. And I sent him a picture of the car. And he's like, is that Mitzi's car? I said, was. So he said, okay, well, can we come and see it tomorrow? I said, yeah, okay, no problem. So obviously I've moved house now, so I don't live here, so I've got to commute into work. So I said to Mitzi, let me take your car into the showroom to get it cleaned, because it was dirty, and I'll bring it back. It did need to be cleaned for a viewing that day. The guys come, they bought the car, I've done them a good deal. It was a good deal for me, it was a good deal for them. But like I say, I've got this disease where I can't turn around and say, no, I don't have anything for sale.
So you'll even sell your wife's car, and she currently doesn't even know.
She doesn't know, but she also doesn't know I've replaced it with a Lamborghini, so she should be okay. She should be okay about it.
Have you ever done that before?
Yeah, all the time.
Sell a car all the time?
Yeah, all the time.
Wow. All right. What's the story you've never shared or a secret you've never told?
Do you want to answer that first, while I think about it?
Me, with us, with each other?
No, just generally, in this business, what's the story you've never shared or a secret you've never told?
I don't like secrets, because I seem to... secrets, not, I'm not a secret type person.
Do you know, like, if you're buying someone something and he lives in the same house as
you... Don't tell me.
You can't tell him.
I was going to tell him.
You can't tell him.
Because he'll just blurt it out.
He just says...
My business partner would say that about me.
But you know what? His mum is exactly... She's notorious. My granny is notorious for doing the same thing.
So you don't... Secrets, no one tells you secrets.
It's just the minute you tell him something, it's like he's on a quest to tell that person. You know? So. I've told him stuff. Rob, I have told him stuff. My sister's called me up before. And she's told me some gossip about something or someone we know. And obviously, we'll sit round. We'll talk about a car. We'll talk about a deal. We'll talk about me going to Japan to buy a car or him going to Germany to buy a car. And in the middle of, I'll go, oh, you'll never guess what's happened with such and such. And he'll go, what am I telling? And then, but I'll say, do not mention this because my sister, Priscilla's, my sister's told me.
Not as bad as this.
And you cannot mention this because she'll kill me.
My
sister will call me up. She'll call me up the next day. She'll call me up the next day and she'll say, he's told her the story back. You never guess what's happened to such and such. But he will add his own bit to the story. It's not the story I told you.
You see, they gave me a surprise birthday party when I was 13 years ago. Him, my other son, Tom, and between my wife, they just all sorted out. Him and Tom took care of it. How they kept it a secret. And it was a genuine secret. Mm. I mean, to organise something like keep it a secret and not find out, it must be so hard to do. He also knew about me being awarded Lifetime Achievement Award. I didn't know about that till we went. It's surprises. And I don't really like surprises.
So do you, like, if there's a secret, you just don't tell him anymore?
You can't tell him.
No.
I don't like surprises.
Right. So you don't want to know anyway.
And you can't even involve him in... you're planning for the secret or the surprise.
Because it come out.
Yeah, he's got absolutely no filter at all whatsoever.
So secrets is something I don't keep.
Okay.
And sharing...
What's the story you've never told about your life or your business?
I've told all of my autobiography. I told a lot in this office.
Which you can get on Amazon.
That couldn't be more cheap.
The deal maker. And the great thing about it is, when you write an autobiography, it's quite a gamble, especially if you're established in business, for it to be whether it's successful or not.
Mm.
And it happened to be a bestseller,
right?
On Amazon for Business.
Yeah.
So that was even more rewarding.
Yeah.
And I was told to write it when I was 50, and I couldn't believe at 50 that I could do a book and somebody'd want to buy it.
Mm.
So I waited till I was 60 and the showroom was finished, because I felt there was nothing else that I wanted to do with my life.
Yeah.
And I am ready. So much has happened since that autobiography was launched, I'm actually ready to write the second one.
Mm.
So,
wow.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So if I make 70, that's when I'm going to do the second autobiography, the 10-year gap.
Right.
And there's so much more, believe it or not, I can put in almost as much in the 10 years as I did in the previous 40
yeah.
in business.
Mm.
That's how much has happened so quickly.
Mm.
And the benefit, you know, the great honours I've received and recognitions and, you know, live in London now and a lot of things have happened in my life in that 10-year time.
Mm.
That
right.
will be that time.
Yeah. What's the story you've never shared?
A story I've never shared. Because of you, I've shared a lot of stories.
You're doing all right out of me.
You've got the inside scoop on all my secrets.
Good.
I don't know. I mean, I think of stories that I haven't really told anybody. I remember once I was doing a deal with a guy on a car, and it was a very, very expensive car, and we were quite a lot of money away. And
that means you were nowhere near
doing the
deal.
Yeah, so the gap yeah. between us was quite vast.
Yeah.
You know, 150,000.
Right.
And but I was offering him every single last penny for this car. Like, it was probably not even worth what I was trying to buy it for. But he was giving it the Billy Big Bollocks kind of treatment. What's wrong? Can't you afford it? All that kind of stuff. And I spun a coin with him for his deal on my deal on a car that was too expensive at my deal. So it would have been 150,000 more expensive
wow.
at his deal. And I'd have lost, I'd have still bought the car. I'd have still done the deal.
Mm.
But I won, thank God. thank God.
He honoured the deal, did he?
Yeah, but
yeah.
the point was, it wasn't even a great deal for me.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, he was testing my pocket, so I decided, I said in conversation, like, let me test yours. I said, well, if it's not that much money to me, or you, if you don't care for that much money, I'll spin you for it.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, for fuck's sake. Shaking the coin like this.
Yeah.
yeah.
But that's the thing I do a lot of, not quite for that money, but I do, you get to a point where I do a lot of business with, you know, my repeat customers. And if you're a few thousand pounds away, I'm not going to miss them on the deal. They're not going to miss me on the deal, but they have a line, they want to get there and I want to get there. And it's fun and it's a bit of banter to say, right, let the universe decide.
Yeah.
So you flip a coin and where it lands, it lands. I've got another story to tell you as well, by the way,
yeah.
about something like that. A guy bought a LaFerrari from me one day, a LaFerrari and a Mercedes 6x6, G-Wagon 6x6. And he came and he seen the cars and he liked them, but he was, you know, once again, he was a hard cookie to crack. He couldn't quite get to the figures that he wanted to get to. But either way, he was leaving with these two cars. That was, I knew I had to make that happen. I mean, it's a big deal,
mm-hmm.
these two cars. We're talking a £4.5 million deal. And we're in the office, and the difference between us is £50,000. And we're in, if you went over to the other showroom, the office next door to my dad, we're in that office. And once again, I said, do you want to spin a coin either way? But at this point, he's pouring himself a few drinks, open the champagne and blah, blah, blah. And he's having a good time. We're having a good time together. And we spun the coin. So I said, look, this is how fair I'll be. Because whether I lost the spin or not, I was happy to lose a spin. Like, he was still, I just wanted him to seal the deal to have the car.
Yeah.
But that was the point where I felt like if I'd have said to him, okay, we'll just do your deal, he would have maybe stood back a bit and gone, am I paying too much here for these cars or what? Let me think about it. I knew that was going to be his personality. So I wanted to try and let him win so he felt really good about spending that much money and buying the cars. So he came with his assistant. So his assistant has never spun a coin in his life. He's never spun a coin in his life. And I could tell that by the time when he spun the coin on this deal, because he literally threw it around the room. There's different rules you have when you spin a coin. If you spin a coin and it hits something, it's invalid.
Yeah.
And this guy, who was the customer, he does this frequently, and so do I. And he was game to do it, and so was I. So I said, let your guy spin the coin, and you call it in the air. Okay, no problem.
But you have to be able to properly spin a coin to do that.
His guy's, he's literally thrown the coin. Bing, 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 bing. We lost the coin for 30 seconds, couldn't find the coin.
Yeah.
So when we found the coin, I'd won the spin. So I looked at his face and he was a bit down and he was a bit embarrassed to say, well, that was a bit of a shit spin, really. So I said, do you want to do it again? I don't feel like that was done properly. Do you want to do it again? Yeah, I'd like to do it again. So I'm giving him a shot to nothing again for 50,000. So I've spun the coin and he's called it and he lost again.
So then I said, right, you've lost. Do you want to spin for another 50,000? He said, no, just do the fucking paperwork, take my card and let me leave.
But that goes back to that sort of spinning the coin is back to the culture thing, even back to my father, my grandfather from the carpet business. That's what we do. Mm. If you gamble in business and you're an entrepreneur, you have to take the type of risks.
So you do that when you're quite far away? Well,
you do it when you're quite close, I think.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a way of thinking, you know what?
It's 50-50.
It's kind of a bit of goodwill in some ways.
That's exactly what it is. It's a bit of goodwill. You might win some, you might lose. I spun a coin with a guy one day from Essex who we know very well, Terry. Mm-hmm. And he actually said to me, because I've done it with him a few times, come on, let's spin the coin.
Yeah.
I'm on the phone to him. I'm on the phone. He's on the phone and I'm on the phone.
And he wants to spin a coin over the phone.
He wants to spin a coin over the phone. This time it's for £10,000. So I said, Terry, I'll FaceTime you. But Terry's got a Nokia 6300 from
1985.
From 1993. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So he's like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Just spin the coin and tell me what it is.
Which puts you in a weird position.
But I'll tell you what I've done.
You gave it to him.
And he don't know this. This is the story.
Terry, you listening? You gave it to him.
I spun the coin, I won the toss, and I gave it to him.
Mm.
And he said to me, you're fucking lying. He said, I didn't win. I said, you did. All right, well, just deliver the card to me then.
Sometimes you got to, that's the story we had in the office. Sometimes you got to do that.
Yeah. So final round, because we have a new round on the show. Mm-hmm. So you haven't done this round. It's the money round. So let's do one tip each from both of you. Let's keep it fairly succinct. So we'll start with you, Tom. Top tip for anyone in a family business.
This special money content is only available in Rob.team. Rob.team is my digital financial freedom platform to help you make, manage, maintain, and multiply more money. For the hundreds of hours of exclusive content on all things money, just type in rob.team.
One thing I said to you earlier is, you do social media, you've obviously got good following on social media, both of you, and therefore you must have done a lot of business on social media, but you could be sending the internet viral with all these cars you've got and the history and the story. Our content always does really well together, and sometimes I wonder, why don't you do more?
Well, you asked me that earlier, and the answer was
the cameras weren't rolling.
No, the answer is we just don't have time. We're so busy buying and selling cars, and at a drop of a hat, Rob, as you know, I'll get on an aeroplane and go and buy a car. And he'll do the same.
Was following you, that'd be just such great content.
The problem is,
25-year-old guy, David's just started with me. He's 25, he's hungry, loves YouTube, you know, he's living the dream coming here. You could easily have a guy like that.
The problem is, we've got a guy like that. But the problem is, we pride ourselves on confidentiality with our customers. So what people really want to see is me turning up to someone's house, negotiating with them, prices being thrown around, watching the payment go through, watching me drive away, vice versa.
Some people would do that.
Not many.
I'll have a go.
Well, we'll do it on the next
All right,
deal.
I'll do it.
Do you want to buy a ghost?
I brought this off me.
I'll buy that off you.
How much?
Are you taking the ghost?
No, it's not the right car.
What's the right car? I've got 65 cars here, Rob. There must be a car here that's the right car.
Well, I think the Mulsanne was better, but you've sold it,
haven't
you? Yeah, I think that's better in the back. But I've brought the Porsche down.
Okay.
Yeah. And I brought the box and papers with this. They're in the car.
Yeah. Let me have a look at it.
So, sure. I mean, you know what it is.
Yeah, but I just want to see what condition it's in.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's slightly worn, but...
So, for those who can't see, this is a Richard Mille RM72 Rose Gold. They brought this out in 2022.
Yeah, it's quite new.
Yeah, 2022. Yeah. Richard Miller took a big hit recently.
That 50% off the price of Porsche turbos. You're gonna have
well,
a bad
day. Well, I'll tell you
day.
What I'll do.
You're having a bad
I'll take the Porsche off you and this RM72 in exchange for the Ghost.
The Ghost's just over 100
now,
grand.
Now, I'll give you some money as well, obviously, but what I'm saying is, if you want to part and parcel, you can't have it all your own way. I'm going to unload a watch to you on the car.
Well, no, the car I'm giving you is the car I bought off you, so that you're getting double dipping on it, aren't you?
But I want to sell you a car that you need. You need a car you've driven it.
Yeah, I need. You haven't got a car I need. It's the Mulsanne, not the Ghost.
I'll tell you what deal I'll do here. He's made me turn my phone off. Can I have your calculator?
Can I go to the toilet?
Yeah, sure. You own the place, Tom.
Turn your microphone off because they'll hear him going.
Have you seen that on Naked Gun? The film Naked Gun with Liam.
My mate,
Leslie Nelson.
Yes.
It's so funny.
David, do you want to give Tom a hand?
Am I still made up? Am I making you work?
No, they're both.
Am I finished
now? Are we still rolling?
Yeah, but let's. Yeah, I mean, I brought that and the papers for the right money. I'll sell you them both. I'll buy plenty off you in the future. It's just you sold them all, Sam. Yeah. I don't. Yeah, the ghost is
for. So, as an example. It'd be cool to do this on camera, actually. As an example, I'll give you the ghost in exchange for the Porsche, level, and I will give you 175 grand for that.
Right. So the ghost you've got on at 105?
105.
You said 110 to 120 you give
me
for that.
That's to sell it for you.
Right.
You're asking me to buy it.
Yeah. And how long would it take to sell, do you think?
I could sell it tomorrow.
Or
don't know, you know, it's one of those things. I don't know.
Yeah. So would you buy the Porsche off me?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you wouldn't do the 115, 110 to 120 that you said?
Not.
What's the difference between you selling it and just giving me the money?
Because
you sell cars quick here, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. We sell cars quick. I would, I'd give you 95 grand for the Porsche today.
But 110 to 120?
To sell for you.
To sell it.
Yeah.
And what's the difference in that 20 grand?
One's guaranteed.
Right.
And the other one is not like, I would never say, Rob, I'll definitely get you 110 in 3 weeks. It could take longer.
Yeah.
And if the market moves, which it probably won't on that kind of car, but if it does, then it does. The difference is you're holding the car and I'm not.
Yeah, right. So you could have it and give me 110 to 120, but then you could say, oh, it's 105, 110.
Exactly, you know, I think...
Do you ever exceed what you...
Well, no, because I know what price we'd put...
You're not the car business. I don't want to be in the car business.
I know what price we're going to put that up for.
He finds me funny, doesn't he?
I know what price we're going to put that up for.
Yeah.
And what would you put we're not going to sell it for more than we're advertising it for.
No.
So what you will get is minus our cut from... when we sell it for that figure.
Yeah, and what would you put that Porsche up for?
120.
Right, yeah. And then you would hope to get me 110 to 120.
110, I would hope to get you.
Right, okay. And why 175 for this?
That's the price of it, that's the market value of it.
No, that's what you offered me. It doesn't mean it's the price, does it?
Well, you can have as long as you want on that office, on that phone, with that camera rolling, and call your mates and call everybody else.
Our mates. Yeah.
And you won't get an offer for it.
Yeah, why not?
Because it's a hard thing to shift at the minute, and it's a lot of money for someone to invest in one piece of stock.
Yeah, but you like this, don't you?
I like it.
Yeah.
I sell a lot of Richard Mills. I've sold 3 Richard Mills this week.
Right, and you do take these for cars?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 175 sounds a bit low.
Not to me, it doesn't.
So, I mean, we're having fun here on a podcast. How would someone pull you up?
Well, you've chucked a lot of obstacles at me. Where you could pull me up is you could say, right, Carl, say I had the ghost.
Right.
Or say I had a car. What would you give me then?
Yeah.
But you're not.
Right. So if you had a Mulsanne like that, which was more what I'd want, what would the deal then look like?
There might be another 10,000 in it for you.
Yeah. Possibly. On the watch.
On either.
Yeah.
I'm valuing them both as a package.
Yeah. So you can be more flexible when there's more.
Because I've obviously got profit in the car that I'm selling you.
Yeah. I mean, I know you don't like the word book, but, you know, these are 255 to 285 on Chrono 24, aren't they?
So I've sold and I've got. And you can have it.
And the gold is gold. It's real value. All these carbon and ceramic things.
Do you know what an RM65 is?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Show me though.
So I've got an RM65
which is not a 72.
No, it's far more complicated than 72. It cost £410,000 book list price.
Right.
Yeah. You can have it for 260 today.
Yeah, but that's a different model, isn't it?
Well, it's a lot more desirable than that.
But it's more money.
Exactly, is because they've dropped in value, Richard Mille. The more expensive they are, the more they've dropped.
So if this was your watch, would you just keep it then?
Yeah,
I think I would. I think the watch market is at
bad time.
Big low at the minute.
Yeah.
And I think it will turn a corner.
So you think these will go back up? Because I think the list was 250 on this, was it?
Yeah, 230.
Yeah.
Yeah, 230.
Yeah. So you as opposed to selling it for 175, you just wait.
Well, look, you know, someone could walk into Richard Mille tomorrow and get that watch.
Which they could,
but
when
you
I
couldn't.
Bought it. Yeah.
But you can now. There's not many things you can't walk into Richard Mille and get.
Yeah.
Without buying a stupid round diver's watch for 300 grand or whatever.
Yeah.
But that RM65, that's £140,000 saving, unworn from list.
Yeah. Is that gold? Yeah. Because that's how it used to be.
Yeah, of course it was.
Before the lockdown.
And things have only gone back to how they were.
Yeah. So do you think these all, over time, go back up?
Richard Mille is a lot like Bitcoin. It's so volatile.
Yeah.
They're flying high in 1 minute and they've crashed another and they fly back high again and it's just getting the timing right.
Yeah.
When you had that watch, it was probably worth over list.
Yeah.
Could have been worth near 300.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave you the Porsche.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll get the job done on the Porsche.
Yeah, thank you.
And look, if we can always readdress it when the right car comes in and against that.
Yeah, well, I am interested in a Mulsanne. I mean, yeah. I'd like to go in and the back and have a look if you don't mind.
So that's an extended wheelbase.
Yes, which I probably would want.
Yeah, yeah.
There seem to be a lot of car for the money.
They're an extremely lot of car for the money. That was a near on £400,000 car.
Yeah. Yeah, because I just want something that's comfortable in the back and all the, you know, the Mercs and things are just a bit plain for me anyway.
Yeah.
I've got to put my granddaughter up, so we've got 15 minutes, would you say?
Yeah, I'll make it that or less.
I didn't know it was that long.
Carl, what's your top tip to grow a business?
You don't accept working hours.
Nine to five. Does not exist.
No, so if you want to grow a business, you've got no chance if you don't work every hour that you're alive.
But what about the people that say work-life balance?
Well, I believe you can, when you get to a certain level, you can quote work-life balance if you like. But if you want to grow your business, you can't, that's the wrong thing to quote.
And do you work a lot?
Yeah. Every minute I'm awake.
Yeah. And what's your tip to grow a business, Tom?
Dedication, commitment. And as you said, he doesn't know any different because that's what he's always seen. I mean, when I make a statement that I work 365 days a year, that's the statement I make. I don't do 9 to 5. And that's just how I am.
Do you think people are a bit less committed now in society and business than they used to be?
I think, yeah. And since COVID, employing people since COVID is a complete pain in the ass. Nobody wants to work.
No one wants to talk about it.
Nobody wants to work.
I don't mind talking about it. The work ethic of people has gone raiding.
Absolutely.
Well, think about it. For 3 years, they got paid to sit at home, watch TV and drink a bottle of wine.
All this.
And now they've got to go back in the office.
All this. When they come for a job, they don't want a job back in the office. They want a job in the office for 2 days, and 3 days at home.
Yeah. And they want to walk their dog and pick their kid up from school. They even say that in the interviews. Yeah, yeah. I want to work from home so I can walk my dog in the morning and pick my kid up from school.
Yeah.
Which is, what, start at 10 and end at half 3.
Yeah. So it just,
and yet they want a lot more money than they used to before lockdown.
Anyway, that's a bit then.
Yeah. Or one of the 932 reasons.
Yeah.
Look at the country,
but the thing is, you only get out of life when you put into it. Simple as that.
Yeah.
I don't care who it is. Unless you win the lottery, the only way you're going to get rich is work hard.
Mm.
And winning the lottery is an exception to that.
Is it true that you don't really believe in delegation?
Well, you've got to...
What was it you said to me earlier?
Well, delegation is ruination for me because it doesn't get done the way I want it done. But you've still got to... You've got to give in to that. You've got to give people... It's impossible. Since I've been sitting here, I could be in 10 different places. And I should be in 10 different places. 10 different places. But I can't be, so...
Still manage to delegate well and not.
Well, I have to. I've got no choice.
But we have a very good team around us. A team that's been very hard to get together and make sure everyone works. And it's not a big team, by the way. And it's not a big team for the reason of we want to be part of absolutely everything. And we oversee absolutely everything. And what he's talking about, he says all the time. He'll walk into a hotel or wherever it may be, and he'll say, you know, I wonder if the owners know that it's being run like this. I wonder if they can see how much money they're losing because of how these people are running this project.
When you're an entrepreneur, that's all you see, isn't it? You see everything as a business.
You can identify it that way.
Yeah.
And you can see it. That's the best thing. If you're on a, I'm a keen golfer. I played less this year than I've ever played. However, what I love on a golf course is when you see all the greenkeepers standing smoking a cigarette reading some newspaper, and there's seven of them, and you play three holes, you come back around the corner, the same seven is standing there. That's just an example.
Yeah.
Did the boss on that golf course know that's happening?
Mm.
That's 3 hours later.
But it happens in every business.
Times 15 pounds an hour, times seven guys.
Doesn't that put a lot of pressure on you, though, sometimes?
No, because
you just check everything.
Well, you can't. Listen, I've just told you, some of you've got to give in to, because it is. But to be fair, the staff that we've got, especially in this business, and even in my leisure home business and residential home business, the good staff, they know what we are, and they know I don't miss a move.
Yeah.
I don't miss a move. Mm. We've got cameras all over the place here.
But it's very hard to, it's impossible to, we've never done it. But that's why we work well as a team. We haven't been away, I haven't been on holiday with my parents since I was 14, because we can't leave at the same time. We can't not be, one of us has to be here, because the other one can relax a bit more knowing that the other one is making sure that the ship runs smoothly. But take both of us away, fuck me, the ship would sink.
But isn't that a flaw in you finding a good
ops
manager?
I don't think that exists.
We don't know. Listen, this business is so unique and it's so unorthodox to anything else. Not just in the car business, but any family business would understand. And you'd have to be a family business to understand that. Or you'd have to be somebody who's very passionate. You said passionate about cars. I'm passionate about the name.
Mm.
I have the name Tom Hartley. I'm underpants.
But you're not going to find.
Not that you're ever going to find that out, but unless you want to find out, I don't know. But not that you ever want to find out. But that's the truth. That's how passionate I am about the name Tom Hartley. Today, yeah. I always wear my cap. I wear my jacket. It's just part of what I do.
Mm.
You're never going to find an employee, and like I say, we've got a great team. But I can't expect them to go home at night worrying about how our business is doing and, you know, losing sleep over something that's going on in our business. They turn up at 9 o'clock, they leave at 5 o'clock, they do their job to a very high standard, and they do it how we like it. But, you know, if there's a problem at 5:01, that's a you problem.
Mm.
You know, it's not your problem.
Mm.
So,
is it worth it?
Honestly, Rob, I don't know anything else.
I have no idea. That's good selling for being an entrepreneur. Is it worth it? I've no idea.
What do you mean, is it worth it? What do you mean by that?
Is it all worth it? Or like working 365 days a year?
Of course it is. Absolutely. Absolutely. I tell you where it's worth it. When you're in a business and you're not a rock star or a superstar or a film star, you go somewhere and somebody comes up to you, wherever you go, and asks you about, could you value this car for me, please? Or could you... tell me what I'd have to pay for X, Y, Z. That's, we're car dealers at the end of the day. Not every car dealer has that sort of profile, that sort of recognition. And like I said to you, I maybe keep saying it to you, but to find yourself as a car dealer in the Motor Hall of Fame, that's sort of worth. That's what it's worth.
Mm.
You can't buy that. There's some letters down there. If you read the letters on the wall, I know businessmen that give £1 million for some of them letters. 1 million or maybe more.
Mm.
You can't buy reputation, and you can't buy success you have to make. So we'll see things different because me being older and I've been in that situation, but for me that's how it is. So is it worth it with every penny?
Carl, are you happy?
Yeah, very. Yeah, very.
Carl's about the happiest person you'll ever see in the car business.
In the car business. So, that doesn't mean you're happy.
I've got a beautiful wife. I have three incredible, beautiful, unbelievable kids. I'm partners in a fantastic business with a fantastic person. What more do you want? And on the way, we earn a few quid, but that's about it.
Mm.
But what more do you want? Mm. I'm healthy.
Happiness is, of everything in life. You know, if you get up in the morning, when I get up in the morning, my wife actually makes a joke. I got up out of bed like I'm selling the big issue, because every morning I get out of bed, it's like my first deal. And I think to myself, and I don't want to sound like I'm patronising myself or blowing my own ass, but that's incredible to have that drive after 51 years. I mean, I think it's incredible.
Mm. Last question for both of you. Carl, what's your most brutal business lesson you've ever had?
You wouldn't learn a more brutal lesson. What that lesson was, I can't remember, but you wouldn't learn a more brutal lesson in life, let alone business, than off of anyone else but him. He'll teach you the most brutal lesson there is to learn. And you only need to learn it once. I mean, Alex Ferguson thinks he's got the hairdryer treatment. Believe me, when we were kids, the hairdryer treatment was... But, it must be a thing from Scotland. I don't know.
You know, there's a true saying in life, and even with staff, and not so much for my family and my sons in particular, and I'm not using the word cruel here the wrong way, but you've got to be cruel to be kind. And even with staff, I see some staff that will look back. I've got a gardener coming to work for me, believe it or not. This is unbelievable. You don't even know this yet. Do you remember Sean? You maybe don't remember Sean. He used to work for us 18 years ago. And he's starting work back next Friday. And it was very hard to drive or motivate. And we're very particular about the grounds. However, he said, you know what? I should have never left this job, Tom. He said, all the things you told me at the time, I couldn't understand. But I learned them as I got older in life. And that's how it has to be. Mm. I mean, these, as I've just said to you again, these never had life like, so don't have to do this, don't have to. They were made to have to work and get up, get out of bed. And you know, I get emails from all over the world from very, very powerful, successful people. My Lazy Bastard podcast thing, you know, get out of bed before 8 o'clock in the morning, you're a lazy bastard. If it's 9 o'clock in the morning, you're a very lazy bastard. They love it. I get stopped in the street. I'm not lazy bastard, TH. And emails.
I get people saying to me, tell your dad I was up at 6 o'clock this morning. I'm not a lazy bastard.
I get emails from very... Tom, you know what? It keeps me on my toes. Mm. It reminds me, you know what? He's not telling the truth. MD understands business. It's the truth. You're not going to make money lying in bed. You're not going to get on in life lying in bed. It's as simple as that. Mm. And you are a lazy bastard if you're in bed after 9 o'clock in the morning. I don't care what your name is. Simple as that. In business... So that's how it is, but you know, it's dedication, commitment. It's what do you want to achieve? My dream, if I die tomorrow, I've got nothing I want to do in my life. So I've done everything I wanted to do, and I've achieved everything I wanted to achieve, and I can't do anything else in the car business that I want to do. So dying tomorrow, would I be frank? I don't want to die, but if I did die tomorrow, I'd say, oh, fuck, I never did this, or I never did that. My wife's very understanding. We were teenage lovers. We were teenage boys, girlfriends, should I say, not lovers, but teenagers. We grew up together as kids. Our families knew each other. I often say it, and people find it very difficult to believe, and it's all said in my autobiography. Everything that's here now, I've seen as a teenager. That takes some believing. But if you're an entrepreneur and you've got a vision, that's what you do. Mm. You see what you achieve. You see what you achieve. You already see it, and that's your goal, and you achieve it. Simple as that. And some people might think that's the only people who are very strong, powerful, and very successful would be watching this podcast here and know exactly what it means, because I've done it. And that's how it is.
And that's a perfect place to end. Carl, if someone wants to inquire or come and buy a car from you, you've got loads of good cars. I can fully recommend you. I've bought 2 so far.
Even though it's dropped 50%. Sorry.
How can they get in touch with you? What should they
do? So they can visit our website, which is tomhartley.com. They can follow us both on social media to keep updated live as cars come in and go out. Tom Hartley Cars or Carl Hartley 1 on Instagram. They can email us at info@tomhartley.com, or they can call our office, which is stated on the website.
And don't be a lazy bastard.
Okay? Don't be a lazy bastard. Buy some cars.
That's right. As simple as that. Out of bed before 8 o'clock in the morning and not after 9 o'clock in the morning. You're a very lazy bastard. I don't care what your name is.
Tom, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Rob, always a pleasure.
Rob, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us around.
Thank you.